Now for agribusiness news, markets, and weather from Studio C, this is Agriculture Today.
Our farm is more resilient against flood and drought. We are more resilient to supply disruptions, and we have a systematic approach that will be economically profitable and viable for generations to come. We need to help American farmers integrate cover crops into their operation within their context.
Rick Clark from Indiana, owner Clark Land and Cattle.
We need to also help American ranchers adopt regenerative grazing practices. On behalf of Regenerate America Coalition, we are pushing to ensure the next farm bill robustly supports regenerative ag. We need better education and technical assistance, equitable opportunities and access, infrastructure and processing, healthy and regionally sourced food, farmland preservation, incentives for soil health and risk mitigation.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
It's really one of the only ways that we have to track, you know, kind of how acreage is being disposed of during the growing season, you know, what acres are initially planted.
On USDA Certified Acres Report, Sean Wade, Director of Policy Analysis and Research with Plains Cotton Growers.
You know, when we have, you know, adverse weather or other activity, you know, that can be detrimental to the crop, how many of those acres are there are being impacted and being failed out that will ultimately not make it to harvest. And so the Certified Acres Report is really a very important tool for us and one of the only ways we can kind of drill down to the county level at this time of the year. And so, like you said, we had a report there about a week and a half ago that came out and really didn't show a lot of change, I think, from the August numbers that we saw initially. But we have kind of reached a milestone from a crop perspective in that from about September the 15th on, the federal crop insurance program, especially on the cotton appraisal methodology, will shift or has shifted from a stand count, you know, just purely looking at how much of a stand is out in the field, to what we call a boll count appraisal method. So they're actually going out and evaluating those bolls that are on the plant and what potential yield might be in the offing for the crop. And so after the September 15th, that's kind of our general date that we see that shift happen, we're beginning to now hear in just what we expected to hear, which is reports of more and more acres being appraised and released through the federal crop insurance program as a result of this year's drought. Of course, many of those acres were just dryland acres that we knew were going to come out eventually. But we're also beginning to hear that maybe a few more irrigated acres than we anticipated might also end up being released as, you know, the rainfall that we received a few weeks ago, you know, may have, you know, impacted the crop in a few unexpected ways, maybe encouraging some of that that little bit of yield that was on the plant to be aborted in favor of the plant trying to produce new growth. And so it's going to be really interesting to see how we end up over the next couple of weeks. And when we get to that early October certified acres report, see how much those numbers change and kind of give us a better feel for, you know, ultimately how many acres we're going to have for harvest here on the High Plains of Texas.
Last batch of big news for the cotton industry was the crop production report. Wade thinks the August number is closer.
That could be correct, I suppose. I would tend to think that the August report from NASA is probably going to be a little bit more accurate than we had first anticipated. You know, certainly we hoped that the crop would be better. And certainly when we saw those additional planted acres that were identified in those certified acreage reporting numbers towards the end of August, that certainly influenced NASA's kind of increase in the crop going into that September report. So we'll just have to see if, you know, as these acres get failed out, if we see a few more acres than we maybe anticipated, we may see that that production number reverse course and get a lot closer back to that August threshold that we saw, you know, right around 3 million bales of cotton here in the state of Texas. So it's you know, it's been just a really tough year, very much a roller coaster year. And like I say, it's really one that's very difficult to pin down. But we're getting closer to the end of the game here. And you know, we'll just see how everything looks when we cross that finish line.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
The McGovern-Dole program, we work with host country governments and also nonprofits to deliver school feeding programs in some of the poorest places on earth.
Brooke Jamison is Foreign Ag Service Associate Administrator on the mission of the McGovern-Dole program.
A lot of the kids in these countries who are receiving the nutrition, they don't have access to quality, nutritious foods a lot of the time. And so we take American commodities, corn, rice, wheat products, soy products, beans, lentils, and we ship them to these places. And then we teach them both how to make something delicious with this product. And usually we try very much to focus it to make it culturally appropriate. And then we also have a side program where we have locally procured products. So fresh fruits and vegetables, spices, sauces, so that it is, again, culturally appropriate, and it's served to these kids. And the number of kids attending school in these areas goes up when these programs start. And so it's also an education program, because once you have a full belly, once you show up at school, you're there to learn. And so we also work with educational organizations to provide the educational benefits as well.
Now, Malia Walker reporting from Manhattan, Kansas, on an upcoming event.
Thursday, September 29th, Kansas State University's Beef Unit will host their 23rd annual Stalker Field Day. K-State Beef Cattle Nutritionist Dale Blossy joins us to share what they have in store for Field Day attendees and give us a rundown on the university's Beef Stalker Unit.
Initially, when we started programming specifically in the stalker and backgrounding areas, we initiated with a conference, if you will, at a local Manhattan hotel where we ran a full-day conference in the confines of a hotel conference area. And eventually, with the development of the Beef Stalker Unit in 2003, we were able to transition it over to this KSU Beef Stalker Unit where it is today. And coincidentally, the Stalker Unit was the site of the first research looking at the use of burning. And so we have a lot of history there, and I tip my hat to the wisdom of the folks that come before me back in the late 1940s that actually made the purchase of the property. And so we're going to continue that spirit of work to help our Kansas industry for sure.
Dale goes on to explain the opportunities that the Stalker Unit offers to students.
The unit is only located about 5 miles from campus, so that really affords the instructors, the teachers, to conduct course sessions out there and allow the students to attend without impacting the ability of the students to get back here on campus. So it really facilitates that, being so close in proximity to K-State. During fall and spring semesters, we typically have upwards of 6 undergraduate students who spend anywhere from 10 to 20 hours per week at the unit. It provides them a good learning opportunity to learn about the day-to-day activities.
Dale shares this year's Stalker Field Day emphasis topic and who the industry professional speakers will be.
In this particular year, I pulled together a panel consisting of folks that are working in areas surrounding transportation. Kansas is a black hole, if you will, for pulling cattle in from all corners of our country for our dominant cattle feeding industry and certainly our cattle processing. And so we pulled together a group of folks, Mr. Jeff George from Finney County Feed Yards, Aaliyah Hilker Heiss, CEO of Hilker Trucking out of Cimarron, Kansas. Jarrah Settles is a lead counsel for the Livestock Marketing Association. And then Margaret Ann Smith, an alumnus of the Animal Sciences Department at K-State, has developed a very reputable cattle purchasing company, Southlex Cattle Company, out of Glasgow, Virginia. And then finally, an opportunity for folks to ask questions by Wes Ishmael. He is now the executive editor for the Hereford World. Wes just does a marvelous job interacting with panel participants, and I'm sure the attendees will really enjoy the outcome of what is discussed during this period of the program.
That was K-State Beef Cattle Nutritionist Dale Blossy speaking on the university's Stalker Unit and giving us a preview of K-State Stalker Field Day on September 29th. I'm Malia Walker, and this has been Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
You know, markets are holding up very well this fall.
Dr. Darryl Peel, Oklahoma State University livestock economist, on the current market situation.
Feeder cattle markets are quite strong. We're running about 15 to 16% above a year ago across the board, from lightweight feeder cattle all the way through the heavyweight feeder cattle. And, of course, fed cattle markets have been holding pretty steady, too. This is normally, for fed cattle markets, about the seasonal low of the year. And, obviously, we've got some stronger underlying trends that are helping support these markets. The feeder cattle markets, the calves may come under a little bit of seasonal pressure here in the next month, but it's actually looking like we may not see too much of that seasonal pressure this fall.
And for those who usually use wheat, we're also looking at a drought. How does that all shake out?
It's quite spotty. Obviously, we do have a lot of dry conditions. USDA's crop progress, the latest one shows that we are planting some wheat in Oklahoma. In fact, we're a little bit ahead of schedule. It's just getting started. And I don't know how much of that is producers dusting it in, if you will, hoping for a rain. There's a few spots that do have some moisture. So obviously, there's some interest in that. And we're not sure this year whether we're going to use wheat pasture for stocker cattle like we normally do. We're short on feed in a lot of cases, so we may be interested in using wheat pasture for cows and calves as much as anything this year. So it's a little uncertain right now in terms of what we'll see for wheat pasture, but there's certainly some interest in it.
Now, speaking of markets, Bob Maurer is with Manduka Trading in Chicago.
So what's happening, right? It's a matter of taking the data that we got from the USDA, and also you can't forget about what's actually happening in the marketplace and the supply and demand inputs that are happening around the world. And right now it seems like there's some decent headwinds in terms of the macro fundamentals. Obviously, with what's happening with interest rates and all the predictors that are coming out there in terms of what could happen into next year for the economy, it looks like things, at least the market is trying to say that things should be slowing down. Okay, now we do get the latest move from the U.S. From the FOMC shortly, right? And we'll see what they do, whether they raise the interest rates another 75 basis points, or some are saying, and I think I read this today, so double check it, but right about a 20% chance of even a 100 basis point move. I wouldn't lean that way. I would lean more towards the 75, in my humble opinion, but nonetheless, it still shows that the Fed believes that it needs to be aggressive in terms of interest rates rising. And why that's important for us is that tends to put a damper in expectations in terms of what the equity market might do. And a lot of us have our retirement accounts and speculative accounts in equities. So, I mean, that kind of diminishes your little wealth effect that you feel on yourself right there, on how you feel about things going forward. And what that does is maybe help you pinch the pocketbook a little bit when it comes to going to the grocery store. Maybe you don't buy the higher end cuts of meat, look for something a little bit cheaper. And that could obviously show itself in perhaps demand for cattle or hogs, right? So we'll see how that all plays out. The other part of that interest rate equation is that interest rates determine currency flows. So if the U.S. at the moment has a more aggressive stance in terms of raising interest rates, and it's not like interest rates aren't going up elsewhere in the world, but if we're on the more aggressive side and you want to get the most bang for your buck, well, you want to go with to the country where it's paying you the best, and that might be the U.S. So that causes us to buy dollars. Value of a dollar goes higher. That makes our exports more expensive. So that's how all this stuff I've been talking about kind of playing into our marketplace and see how things work.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
I think that we do have a good opportunity to see an extension of ERP for 2022 crops.
Sean Wade is Director of Policy Analysis and Research with Plains Cotton Growers. He's talking about the Emergency Relief Program from USDA. It actually replaced the WIP Plus program.
Certainly, we've had significant weather impacts, especially, throughout kind of the Texas and the Great Plains back west. So there's certainly a lot of need out there. And that is a topic of conversation that's gained some traction in Congress. And so it would not really surprise us to see something happen after the elections as Congress comes back to consider, an omnibus reconciliation budget appropriations type package. And certainly Plains Cotton Growers is advocating for that. In fact, we've got our CEO, Cody Besson, and our officer team are up in Washington, D.C. this week. And that's one of their primary topics of conversation. They meet with Senate and House members is to kind of just reiterate how important that extension is going to be to producers trying to really find a way to kind of navigate their way through a very, very difficult 2022 growing season. Just the economic impacts that short crop is going to have on a lot of folks, especially here in the state of Texas and most especially here on the high plains of Texas.
Sean Wade is with Plains Cotton Growers in Lubbock. U.S. beef exports again topping a billion in July.
The latest red meat export results from USDA included another big month for U.S. beef exports. U.S. Meat Export Federation President and CEO Dan Hallstrom has more details in this USMEF report.
Another billion-dollar month, broad-based growth in a lot of key markets. Japan was up 8%. China continues with growth of about 30%. Some markets like the Philippines as well that were strong. And back in this part of the world, the Caribbean and Central America saw growth. Now, that's in the face of some pretty significant headwinds. The U.S. dollar continues to strengthen against some of our key currencies, specifically Japan and Korea. And that's something to keep an eye on. And while the international logistical situation appears to be improving, it's definitely not back to normal. We have some additional work to do there, but at least it does look like it's improving a bit. So I think we got to be aware of these headwinds, but the outlook still looks pretty positive going forward on beef.
July pork exports were lower year over year, but showed increasing strength in some markets.
On the pork side, July is also similar to the last several months. We were down 6% year on year globally, but still saw a lot of strength out of Latin America, Mexico in particular. While the volume was down a bit seasonally, we were still up 6% for July, and we're still maintaining a record pace on double-digit growth on the value side. And, of course, we have to talk about Colombia. Colombia continues to amaze, up over 20% for the month of July, off of a record year last year. When you look at the rest of the world, Korea, a large month for pork. Of course, China continues to be a negative, down 16% year on year, but it is the largest volume month of the year in July. And we forecasted this, that there should be an uptick in demand for imported pork for the balance of the year. It won't be anything like 2020, but we do see a modest return in demand for China.
I'm Joe Sheely.
Thanks, Joe. USDA out with the commercial red meat production report. And for the U.S., for August, up 105% year over year. It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
The flash drought that started in June really abruptly shut off our forage growth, and a lot of us are struggling to secure that hay supply as we think about the onset of winter just a few months down the road.
That's Dr. Mark Johnson. He's a livestock breeding specialist with Oklahoma State University. He's talking about a feed analysis study on your hay.
At this point, we know that we are not only in a drought ourselves, but most of our surrounding states are way down on hay inventories because of persistent drought. And so it can come as a relief to find somebody that says they've got hay to sell you. And yet, it is a really good idea to ask for that analysis of the content of that hay before you actually purchase it. But what can you learn from a feed analysis report? Well, you're going to be able to get back information on the dry matter content of your hay, the crude protein content of the hay, the energy level that's in the hay. The simplest form and way to look at that is a total digestible nutrients or TDN content. We can also see information come back on net energy for maintenance, net energy for gain, and net energy for lactation if we want to look at more precise estimates of energy content. And we can get just a relative feed value of that hay as well. We're standing in a hay barn here this morning, and it's a good example. We could go look at a couple bales of hay, crack them open, and actually find hay that has been put in this barn over the past few years. It may appear very similar to the naked eye. Something like Bermuda grass hay, we may look at two big bales. They appear to be very similar. We may find that they vary a great deal as far as crude protein content and energy content. If we've got that information, say on two potential sources of Bermuda grass hay, it's priced the same. We may find one is 15 to 20% crude protein, maybe total digestible nutrient values of 60, and another one that appears the same, maybe at 5 to 7% crude protein content, and be down around 50 to 55% TDN. It helps us to make a more informed purchase if we've got that feed analysis report. I think you're going to find most of your better hay vendors are going to provide that information so you can take that into account in making hay purchases. The other thing in a year like this, where we're going to see some failed, say, corn or milo crops that got turned into hay, it's a good idea to get that nitrate test. Various nitrate levels leading to nitrate toxicity can cause us a variety of issues when we start feeding those to beef cattle, particularly pregnant cows. We may get to a level of nitrates that are high enough to actually cause abortions. We may get all the way up to levels that can cause death in some extreme cases, but it's a very good idea to get that nitrate test back and take a look at the nitrate content of those hays before you actually make that purchase. And our nitrate toxicity fact sheet actually is a little more informative of what we can do if we've got some of that hay on hand or potentially purchase it. So just some ideas to keep in mind. By getting a feed analysis report of our hay, whether it's already on hand or we're purchasing, it helps us to plan so that we end up with maximum livestock productivity out of our feeding program so we can feed accordingly.
Dr. Mark Johnson, Oklahoma State University Livestock Breeding Specialist. Learn more online at sunup.okstate.edu. It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
To address this need, the federal government has committed tens of billions of dollars, once again, over the past 15 years, to fund new broadband systems across the country.
Ranking member on the House Ag Committee is G.T. Thompson from Pennsylvania, says it takes more than just money to fix the rural broadband issue.
The bipartisan infrastructure bill alone provided a staggering $42 billion for broadband infrastructure just last summer. Important to point out, and I think everyone in this room would agree, USDA and RUS in particular is the point to bridge the digital divide in rural America. And for those who don't know or are listening, USDA only got $2 billion. I don't have a lot of trust in NTIA or FCC. They received significant dollars back under the stimulus in 2010, and they failed to bridge the digital divide. That's just based on facts and observation. But I'm a big believer and I'm really thankful for our witnesses we have here today from USDA. Today's multiple federal agencies, including USDA, NTIA, the FCC, and the Treasury, are each individually responsible for distributing billions in broadband aid under their purview. Coordinating the distribution of those funds is essential. Far too often, we've seen huge appropriations become insufficient through wasteful spending, inadequate oversight, poor planning, duplicative application, where they go in and rebuild things that were built before versus reaching out to that last mile. And it will take a concerted effort between USDA. I actually believe it's going to take a better investment than $2 billion in USDA, and certainly better than concentrated effort between USDA, NTIA, and the FCC to ensure these taxpayer funds do not meet a similar fate. Now, I remained at this point that USDA was largely excluded from playing in its essential role, and a role that it plays very effectively. We see that evidence of that each and every year, and more of a piecemeal approach in bringing broadband and its unparalleled understanding and reach into rural communities. It is the best situated agency to help rural providers serve their communities, yet my colleagues in the Senate made a different choice, choosing instead to create a new series of programs that comes with new bureaucracy and, quite frankly, new administrative costs that takes away from actually achieving all the making that investment in resulting in full connectivity. And so in addition to focusing on coordination, we must also ensure these new programs are accessible, they're efficient, and they're effective for rural service providers. As these new agencies wade into the difficult work of bridging the digital divide, it is critical they focus on the unique needs of rural communities. Thank you to Madam Undersecretary for again being with us to talk rural broadband. I've always appreciated the work the Rural Utility Service does for our rural Americans. And thank you to our witnesses on the second panel. I look forward to hearing from each of you. I would be remiss if I didn't share my utter disappointment and, quite frankly, shock that representatives from the Federal Communications Commission and the National Telecommunications and Information Administration declined the invitation to testify today. Their absence is noted, and it illustrates their indifference towards the needs of rural Americans and our rural communities. Mr. Chairman, once again, I really appreciate you and our friendship and the work that have been able to do together to advance good, strong bipartisan legislation to bolster USDA's broadband programs. And I look forward to working with you on the upcoming Farm Bill to continue our work in strengthening rural connectivity.
Ranking Member, House Ag Committee, G.T. Thompson. It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
Following a number of weeks of improving pasture conditions across the country, we're starting to see some declines in late September.
USDA meteorologist Brad Rippey says for the period ending September 18th,
43% of the nation's rangeland and pastures rated very poor to poor. That's a 2 percentage point increase from last week. 28% good to excellent. That's a 1-point drop from September 11th.
The dividing line between pasture and rangeland conditions remains the Mississippi River. Most good to excellent east of the Mississippi, mostly very poor to poor to the west.
As we get into this warm, dry, late summer, early autumn pattern, we still see some very difficult pasture and rangeland conditions in some of our key livestock areas across the nation's midsection. That is a concern because you'd really like to see some rain at this point in the year, helping with some revival and recovery of rangeland and pastures before the cold season arrives. That may not happen in time.
I'm Rod Bain reporting in Washington, D.C.